Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Forest of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way. And I am your host, Mary O'Malley. And today we're exploring the indescribable joy of flowing with life. Everything flows in nature. Water flows from the mountains to the oceans. Light waves dance all around us and within us. Sound waves flow everywhere, some as quiet as the movement of a grain of sand, and others as loud as a roaring hurricane. Day flows into night, winter into spring. Blood flows throughout our body, sap flows up and down trees, and the earth flows 65,000 miles an hour around the sun. The only thing that doesn't flow is most human minds. Because our minds are dualistic in nature, they see things through the lens of good and bad, right and wrong. They set up what they like against what they don't like. Because of this, they are usually caught in a world of struggle trying to control life rather than be open to its intelligent flow. How do we open to flow again? The first thing is to recognize that our mind is an amazing gift we have been given and is necessary for maneuvering through life. But it's not reality. It's just thoughts about reality. As the great Zen philosopher Alan Watts once said, no matter how many times you say the word water, it will never be wet. When our attention is caught in the world of thought, it cuts us off from being present for this astounding and miraculous thing called life. The second thing that helps us to be open to the flow of life is to begin to comprehend that our dualistic mind thinks pleasant is good and unpleasant is bad. Easy is good and difficult is bad. Light is good, dark is bad. But every single atom that makes up every single thing in the universe has a positive and negative charge. Some very wise person many eons ago understood this and created the yin and yang symbol. In this symbol, dark and light are not on opposite sides of a line. In fact, they are nestled together. And in the light is a point of dark, and in the dark is a point of light. So you, like everybody else, are a mixture of dark and light. And your life, like everybody else's, is a mixture of easy and difficult, joyous and sorrowful. And you, like everybody else, took on misperceptions about yourself and about life when you were very young. You got lost in struggle and had moments where you wondered, what is this all about? But what would happen if, rather than seeing your so-called dark as a mistake or something that is wrong with you, you see it as fuel for your awakening out of the dream of separation, out of the belief that thoughts are your reality? Before we explore what I mean by that, I want to share with you that at times I think whatever that was that created all of this was having a bad day. My goodness, why do we have to take on all of this darkness? I have no idea if the answer I'm going to share with you is the truth, but it helps me to settle into my dance of dark and light, not trying to hold on to the good stuff and not trying to push away the so-called bad. So my answer is, we live in a dualistic world, and things are recognized in their relationship to their opposite. So, if there was no such thing as night, we wouldn't recognize day. Day would be invisible because we can only see it in relationship with night. So it makes sense to me that each one of us has to forget who we really are and take on all of these struggles, getting lost in them. So when we begin to come out of the clouds of our mind, we can then recognize the huge difference between thinking about life and being present for it. We can see that rather than fighting with what is, magic happens when we allow whatever is to be here, giving it are accepting attention, so it can let go. We can then see the spaciousness we truly are, and that struggle is not our home. Because this is hard to put into words, I'm going to give you three examples from my life about how the darkness I took on revealed to me the exact opposite. Until my late 20s, I not only felt deep, deep shame about myself, but I also felt revulsion. This is why I believed I didn't deserve to live. But as I discovered how to relate to my shame rather than from it, oh, I'm so ashamed. Oh, shame is here. And after learning how to give it the accepting attention it needed to let go, I opened into the exact opposite of shame, a deep compassion for myself and others. And because I live a good deal of the time from an open heart, when shame comes for a visit, and it still does at times, the contrast is so great that I can immediately see that I've just gotten seduced into my old stories about life. I can touch my shame with my accepting heart, and it moves right on through me. I also took on deep, deep fear. I had a childhood you wouldn't wish on anybody, and one of the many layers of trauma I experienced was after my parents divorced. My mother decided that my father was trying to make her go insane. So from when I was age 10, she believed that he had hired somebody to come into our house whenever we were not there and move something. Not steal something, just move something. I just get a lump in my throat when I share that. My mother gave this person a name, Kilroy. And I didn't really know that Kilroy was imaginary until my late 20s, when my mother moved to Canada to get married and decided that my father had hired somebody in Canada to continue watching her house. Boy, as I share this story with you, I want you to get the level of fear that permeated my home. I took on that fear hook, line, and sinker. And over the years, I became tighter, smaller, desperately trying to control this fear. Oh, as I'm talking about this, it's bringing tears. Can you imagine how afraid I was as a little girl? And that was only one level of abuse that I experienced. But we literally breathed fear. And oh my God, I tried to get rid of the scared one inside of me. I tried to eat her away. I tried to drink her away. I tried to fix her away. And it was only when I learned how to be with her, to give her permission to be here, that she began to let go and finally feel safe. And what was the contrasting experience of that level of fear? A deep trust in the unfolding of life. It is the kind of trust that our mind would never agree to. But the more you unhook from the world of thought, using it for the wonderful tool it is, rather than being lost in it, the more you see that life is a highly intelligent process, giving you the exact set of experiences you need to come out of the dream of thought, so that you can make an immediate, intimate, and alive connection with life exactly as it is. That is why I created over the years my yes file. It's yes with three exclamation points after it, which has become 13 pages long. And it is filled with quotes from all sorts of people, from Buddha to Jack Kornfield to Eleanor Roosevelt to Eckhart Tolle to Ram Dass to Thomas Edison to Byron Katie and on and on and on. And lately, I've been sharing more and more quotes from that file, and here is one I haven't yet shared. It comes from Manly P. Hall, speaking the voice of God. He who knows not that the Prince of Darkness is the other face of the King of Light knows not me. And I'm going to say that again because this is such a powerful quote and I really want you to let it in as I share it with you again. He who knows not that the Prince of Darkness is the other face of the King of Light knows not me. In other words, he's talking about the yin and yang symbol. And as long as you struggle with darkness, rather than bowing to it, you will not open beyond the tight and small world of your mind and connect with who you truly are. You are the light that Manly P. Hall is talking about. So just let that in. Maybe, just maybe, the darkness that you have taken on is tailor-made to bring you to the fullness of who you truly are. So the third example from my childhood is I lived most of the time in a bedroom with an older sister whose way of surviving the insanity of our family was to put me down and shut me up. I learned never to ask for anything and even say anything, for it would be twisted and used against me. As I'm sharing that, I can just feel this little bit of roiling in the pit of my stomach whenever I imagine those bedrooms I lived with her. They were really, really hard places to be. So I learned to become invisible and was excruciatingly afraid of being a bother. When people began to ask me to teach in my late 20s, I resisted for almost 11 years because the idea of speaking my truth to the world was absolutely daunting. Then I began to feel the difference between the experience of being contained and the experience of being real, of just speaking my truth. The more I did this, the more I began to relax into the flow of life. And out of that has come books and retreats, blogs, and radio shows. My agent once asked me, "Do I ever get writer's block?" And I said, "No, I don't." She said, "Well, you're the only writer I work with that doesn't get writer's block." And I said, "That's because I know I'm not the one that is writing. I just wait until life tells me to write. And then I just am there in front of a blank page. And I ask life, what do you want to say? And it just comes pouring out of me. And I don't edit it. I just let it flow. And then maybe the next day or a couple of days later, I'll go back and read it. And it's almost like listening to music. It's da 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 da, you know. And it may be a sentence or a word I really love, or even a paragraph or even a page. But feeling my way into the flow of life, when it says this doesn't belong here, I trust it. I wouldn't ever want to live my childhood over again, but it was grist for the mill, demanding that rather than staying hidden and constantly judging myself and continually trying to fix myself, I'd be myself. I'd listen very deeply to the truth as it spoke inside of me. Was this easy? No. In fact, at the beginning, it was very scary because I constantly had to work with the part of me that felt I would be annihilated if I showed up as myself. Remember my older sister. My mother once asked her what in the heck she was doing with me, and she said, "I am going to best her at everything she does." And you know, my sister is in my heart now because I really understand that being on top of everything, being the best, that was how she survived our family, to be in control of the life around her. And the one thing she could control was me. And it's so wonderful to meet her in my heart. But that was a lot to take on. But slowly and surely, I was able to be with the part of me that felt the only safety came from being contained. And then I began to reconnect with the opposites of my darkness. Most of the time, I feel safe re-entering the flow of my life, trusting myself and trusting life. And that is what I share with you. Of course, there will always be times when we come to our edge. That will always happen while being in our body. You know, we look at the tides and the rhythm of our heart valves and the opening and closing of the seasons. And we realize while we're in a body, we will always open and close. And when we close, we will come to our edge. My edge used to be just 1 millisecond into the closing, and now my edge is almost as big as the universe, but it's still my edge. That's the place where we haven't yet been able to stay conscious with whatever is appearing. I see you. It's okay that you are here. You can stay as long as you need to. Thank you for trying to take care of me all of these years. So cancer has highlighted an edge I have only briefly been able to be with, and that is the feeling of being overwhelmed by life. I was overwhelmed by life when I was young. I oftentimes would describe my childhood as being imprisoned in a garbage compactor and the walls constantly coming in, and then they almost crush me and then they go back out again. And so I had to work with this very hard. But with all the inner work I had done, I was able to be free enough to travel the world and share my journey. But cancer brought up out of the depths the feeling of deep, deep unsafety I knew as a child. I have spoken at other times about my hands being bound, but it feels right to share it again here. My mother took a child development class in her late 50s, and she came to me and told me what she had done. She didn't hold me when I was fed. I was bottle prop. They have these horrific contraptions that hang the bottle above the baby. And, you know, as I've shared with you before, the study at the University of Wisconsin in 1952, the cruel, cruel study that really revealed so much to us. They took baby rhesus monkeys away from their mothers at birth and put them in cages by themselves. And then they had the choice of one of two surrogate mothers. One was a wire-form monkey that had a bottle hanging from it, and one was a cloth monkey. If they chose the wire monkey, they didn't get to cuddle. If they chose the cloth monkey, they didn't get to eat. And 100% of the time, they chose the cloth monkey. Boy, tears just coming as I say that. So a child needs connection, and I didn't have it. I didn't have those loving eyes or that hand that would play with my hand or fiddle with my hair as I ate. So I began to suck my thumb. But that wasn't okay in my mother's world. So they painted my thumb with bad tasting stuff. So then I sucked my fingers. They painted it with bad tasting stuff. That need for connection, that primal need for connection was so strong that I sucked through the bad tasting stuff. And then they put popsicle sticks on my fingers. And my mother told me that when she would put me to bed at night and they would tie my arms down, and I would just scream and wail and then cry and then sob and then whimper and then finally fall asleep. Can you feel the panic of that child, the aloneness she was experiencing, the completely overtaken by life? And they did break me. I never sucked my thumb or my fingers again. But of course, then I got very, very sick, because all of those feelings have to go someplace. And when I feel my way back into her, the core feeling is the fear of being annihilated. Ah, wow. So awakening is like peeling layers of an onion. And I have healed so much, but now I am working at the core, because the cancer, now the unsafety is in my body. It's with me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And sometimes I fall into reaction to it, but I'm very aware that I can be a victim to all of this. Or I can recognize that life is putting me in situations to bring up what was frozen deep inside when I was so young, so it can be set free. So I want to read you a poem, one of my all-time favorite poems. In my first book, Belonging to Life, I wrote one of my all-time favorite chapters called The Fertility of the Dark, which carries the message that we're talking about here and fleshes it out even more. And it begins with this powerful poem by Roshani Rea that is called The Unbroken. there is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside which is unbreakable and whole while learning to sing. Just let that in. And I want to say it again because this really speaks about what we're talking about here. It really speaks about moving beyond a mind that is fighting with this and trying to fix this and trying to get better at this and thinks it's less than this. It's basically saying that our darkness is full of treasures. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside which is unbreakable and whole while learning to sing. Oh, my heart just sings as I share that with you. This poem is a celebration of the really difficult times in our lives that break us open. They crack open the shell of forgetting, and they open us into the place inside which is unbreakable and whole while learning to sing. When we come to know that our challenges are for us, we can then and only then know the joy of being fully available to life. What would your life look like when you begin to trust it all? Trust that it will always be a dance of dark and light, easy and difficult, joyous and sorrowful. What happens if there's nobody to blame, including yourself, for all the challenges you took on? How I would answer that is you begin to understand that every single challenging experience is here, not because you have done something wrong or they have done something wrong. It is here with gifts embedded in it. Since my cancer diagnosis almost 4 years ago, the main question I live in is life. What are you showing me now? I have grown immensely since that diagnosis. Now, would I like not to have cancer? Of course. But I see the suffering that comes when I resist the difficulties of my life. And I see the opening and the healing that comes when I show up for what is showing up. When we hear this way of working with life, it usually resonates very deeply inside of us, but it's so easy to forget it. It's so easy to move back into struggling with life, separated from the flow. There's a little mantra I created in my book, What's in the Way is the Way, that really helps you to move from the victim mode, where life is happening to you, to the curiosity mode about what life is offering you right now. And that mantra is, life is set up to bring up what has been bound up, so it can open up, to be freed up, so you can show up for life. And after I wrote the book, I added one thing in there. Life is set up to bring up what is bound up, so you can listen up, so it can open up, to be freed up, so you can show up for life. Because it is in that listening, that's what our darkness longs for, is somebody to say hello, somebody to not make it bad or wrong, somebody to bow to the teacher that it is. So before I share with you a story out of my life that this mantra is relevant about, a story that shows the power of staying open to even the difficult, I want to define what awakening is. For me, it's coming out of the clouds of thought in our mind and being consciously connected to life the moment it appears out of mystery. When I was waking up in the 60s, oh my God, we were going for enlightenment. We were going to arrive at this blissful place, leaving all our struggles behind. This idea was so seductive that for eons, any of the major teachers of awakening taught that enlightenment is arriving at a fixed place. And then also then the movie Secret came out and said, if you just think right, then everything will be okay. Thank God I was a failure at nailing things down. And thank God I heard Pema Chodron, the wonderful Buddhist nun, say, enlightenment is relaxing into life. Which is the same way of saying opening to the indescribable joy of the flow of life. So look up as you're listening and really see the space you're in. See it as if you have never been on planet Earth before. See it without any thoughts laid over the top of it. That is what it means to be awake to life. But of course, very quickly, thoughts lay a veil between you and the immediacy of life. But if you fight this, you'll only be caught in struggle. Instead, you recognize as a soul that you have taken on some of the unconsciousness that humanity has gotten lost in. And in the same lifetime, you're being invited to see through these clouds and again know the indescribable joy of being open to the flow of life. When you recognize this, you realize that your job is to show up for life as it is, not trying to create a different reality, not trying to change this reality. Instead, with your mind, your body, and your heart, be as available as you can to what life is offering you. Or, as Stephen Levine said, the path to your freedom is in the ground beneath your feet. Another quote, it's from Ram Dass. He was our elder brother for so many of us that were waking up in the 60s and the 70s. He also said, it is all unfolding in a perfectly lawful way. If you stand back far enough, you'll see that suffering is a part of the law. From where I am sitting, there are no errors in the universe, not one. Where you are right now, in this moment, with all of your problems, with all of your if-onlys, just where you are in the moment is the absolute optimal place to be from a spiritual point of view for your optimal growth. Enlightenment is relaxing into the flow. The flow of easy and difficult, dark and light. With that in mind, I want to share with you a story from my life. The cancer I have is a rare form of blood cancer, and as long as I take the chemo pills every day along with a baby aspirin, it won't kill me. But I have a very sensitive digestive tract, so sensitive I can't even use regular toothpaste as it burns my mouth. So taking these pills really upsets my digestive tract, especially my stomach. Over the years, I've learned how to work with this, but it's getting more challenging. So I called my gastroenterologist, and the next appointment opening they had was in 3 months. A month later, I called and said, boy, I really need to see her. And they fit me in on a day where I was leading a group. So I told them I'd be a few minutes late, and they said that was okay. I woke up that day really not feeling well, and I ended group early. But when I arrived at their office, nobody was there. Calling out for someone, a woman finally came and told me they had moved to the top floor. Okay, trying not to be late. Okay. Then one of the elevators was broken, and I had to wait for a seemingly really long time. Now, unsettledness was beginning to increase inside of me. When I arrived, they handed me a tablet and said I had to check in. No, I told them I already checked in online. They said, no, you have to do it again. So now I'm even later. And then the medical assistant took me back to the scale and wanted me to weigh in, and I told her, I don't do that. And she was affronted, and she said, I will talk to the doctor about that. I'm sharing this all with you because I want you to get a sense that unsettledness was increasing over time. So when the doctor came in, I was not quite in my center. And I asked her about the antibiotics I had been taking because I had messenger back in December because I didn't know whether how much I should take and whether we needed to add another one to that. But I just went ahead and took them because I didn't hear from you. And she took that ball and ran, and she went online, and she was pointing out that, you know, here, I messaged you here, and I did this, and I sent prescriptions there. Well, she was talking about our conversation in June. I was talking about a message I had sent her in December. But by this time, I froze. Remember, that was how I survived my childhood, and I was really not feeling well that day, and I'd become unsettled through, you know, all the lateness and everything. And I can remember a mantra happening in my head, I don't want to be here, I don't want to be here. I did ask her at the end of our conversation, what do I do with this pain in my stomach, and she dismissed it. As soon as I left, I wanted to eat something. Really unskillful. And that was my wake-up call. When that shows up, it means there's something inside of me that needs me. It doesn't need the food. It needs to be seen and met. So I went home and sat with this. And what I was feeling was one of the main ways I experienced life when I was growing up, of being a bother, of being discounted, of being told I was making a big deal out of nothing. Oh, that was a huge part of my childhood. Besides that, shame had shown up because I froze and I was not a better advocate for myself. I remembered life is set up to bring up what has been bound up so it can open up. So it can be freed up, these old beliefs from my childhood that were woken up again through this experience. I also remember that awakening is the peeling of the layers of the onion. Yes, I've done a lot of work. I've released a lot of the contractions. but this was something that it was so deep inside of me that I had to really grow into my heart and grow into my awareness, my curiosity, before I could give it the loving attention. These parts that feel so unseen, so unheard, so judged, and so wrong. That night, I had a dream in three parts. In the first part, I was one of the speakers at a conference, and as I arrived at the main hall, there were hundreds and hundreds of people. It seemed like the hall went on forever. And they were all sitting around tables. And at every table where I went over and tried to sit down, they would close ranks, and they would not let me sit with them. Even in the dream, the pain was so deep that I began to cry. And by this time, I was half awake, no longer in the dream, but just present for these tears that were coming from my stomach, which had been having such a hard time. I can remember it was like I had waited my whole life for these tears, and I wanted them to continue forever. It was like scratching an itch that I had never, ever been able to scratch before. And I welcomed these tears, and I welcomed the little girl that was so alone when she was growing up. In the next dream, I was the main speaker at a different conference, and I was sitting up on the stage, but nobody knew that I was there. So when the head of the whole thing got done speaking and he got off the stage and started walking down the aisle, I got off the stage, went to him, and told him I was here and it was time for me to speak. And he agreed. So I went back onto the stage to wait my turn, and the person sitting right below me turned around and said, "Wow, you are a religious authority." Even in the dream, I laughed and then turned to the person next to me and kind of sloughed it off. But it was the recognition that I had something to say. I would not call myself a religious authority, but what the heck? We don't have the choice about what shows up in our dreams. In the last segment of the dream was right before I woke up. And it was just a flash of me standing in front of a freezer section in a grocery store. What these three dreams showed me, the first was the disempowerment I took on with a deep grief of being rejected and unseen. In the second dream, I claimed my empowerment. And the third dream reminded me that so much of my essence had been deeply frozen years ago. And this is a process unfolding, and that there are still parts of me in the deep freeze, especially this part that came up in the doctor's office. And it will be healed in the right time and in the right way. Did I like what I experienced in the doctor's office? No. But I trusted enough to be present for whatever that experience brought up inside of me. Now, not right away. When I left it, I was just, ringing from the rafters, But slowly and surely, okay, what am I experiencing right now? Coming back to my breath, coming back to being curious about what was showing up inside of me. And then the dreams that night showed me that taking on true disempowerment can lead to empowerment if you show up for what is showing up. Or as Stephen Levine titled one of his books, A Gradual Awakening, somebody once asked him, "How long does this take?" And he said, "It is the work of a lifetime, but I will add it's the only game in town." I had to freeze my true empowerment deep inside in order to survive my family when I was young. But that day, I took another leap into releasing the conditioning that I took on from a very traumatic childhood so I can simply be me. Not better than anyone else, but also not less. And allowing the unique message that wants to move through me. So this is our task in this schoolroom called life, to take on what we're not, get lost in all the struggles, and then slowly dissolve them through the light of our accepting attention, so we can become the fullness of what a human being can be, that we can become a part of the healing of our planet. And that is what this time of evolutionary opportunity is all about. The old kind of mind that has caused so much heartache on this planet, that is, it's having its kind of death throes, you know, it's showing up as fear-based politicians and dictators and greed and all of that. But you and I are the place where the new kind of mind can show up. The new kind of mind, which really is a heart mind. So we can finally know that we're all in this together, living on a tiny blue green jewel of a planet, floating through vast oceans of space. Is this easy to become truly authentic? No. But when we realize that our life is for us and that everything is our teacher, we no longer have to be a victim to it all. And that is when we will listen and gather all the gifts that come from the challenges of our lives. So I want to end with a spectacularly wonderful poem by Jan Richardson called Jacob's Blessing. And she's talking about these challenges that we all experience. And she calls them blessings. If this blessing were easy, anyone could claim it. As it is, I am here to tell you that it will take some work. This is the blessing that visits you in the struggling, in the wrestling, in the striving. This is the blessing that comes after you have left everything behind, after you had stepped out, after you have crossed into that realm beyond every landmark you have known. This is the blessing that takes all night to find. It's not that this blessing is so difficult as if it were not filled with grace or with the love that lives in every line. It is simply that it requires you to want it, to ask for it, to place yourself in its path. It demands that you stand to meet it when it arrives, that you stretch yourself in ways you didn't know you could move, that you agree to not give up. So when this blessing comes, born in the hands of the difficult angel who has chosen you, do not let go. Give yourself into its grip. It will wound you, but it will tell you there will come a day when what felt to you like limping was something more like dancing as you moved into the cadence of your new and blessed name. Wow. Oh, let it in. So when this blessing comes, whatever blessing you are experiencing now, whether it's a challenging relationship or a health difficulty or you've lost a loved one, so when this blessing comes, born in the hands of the difficult angel who has chosen you. Wow, that is so powerful. This is here in your life, not because you've done something wrong or somebody else has done something wrong, that you were a soul strong enough to take on these challenges. And then she goes on to say, do not let go. Give yourself into its grip. In other words, say yes to it. It will wound you. Yes, it will wound you. We're all wounded. But I tell you, there will come a day when what felt to you like limping was something more like dancing as you moved into the cadence of your new and blessed name. Thank you, Jan Richardson. May you know that your challenges are tailor-made for you. They are not here because you've done something wrong or you have been wronged. They are tailor-made to bring you home. Life is set up to bring up what has been bound up. So you can listen up, so it can open up, so it can be freed up, so you can show up for the amazing adventure, the trustable flow of life. Thank you for listening, for all the children that are coming after us. Thank you for showing up for your life so they don't have to get as caught as we did. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.